Welcome back to Defining Truth, where we examine headlines through the lens of eternal principles and biblical conviction. I'm Josiah O'Neill, here with Brandon Jones, and today we're tackling two urgent issues shaping the battle for America's soul: the growing war over election integrity, and a little-known California bill that, if passed, could open the door to legal human trafficking. Let's get into it. All right. Welcome back to Defining Truth, episode 58. It's been a minute, but let's jump back into it. We're going to get right into Trump's push to eliminate mail-in ballots. Now, I'm going to kick it over to Brandon here in a minute because we got a lot to say about mail-in ballots and why they're a terrible idea and why this was sort of a leftist phenomenon that popped up circa the COVID years. It was extremely useful for, I would say, election manipulation and let's just call it what it is, cheating. And why Trump wants to reverse this. So President Trump is drawing a line in the sand, essentially. He's calling for a ban on mail-in ballots across the country and electric voting machines, by the way. Full stop. His critics call it dangerous. That is Marxist and anti-American leftist. But many of us on the right call it absolutely necessary. So let's talk about that for a second. Brandon, what is some stuff that you've seen here in California, for example, on the dangers of mail-in ballots and sort of loopholes that they expose?
Yeah, so first I want to start with sort of the original intent of mail-in ballots and why they can be a good thing on a small scale. So mail-in ballots were originally designed for maximum accessibility and convenience. It was for the elderly people who maybe it was a burden on them or they weren't physically able to make it to a voting facility. They can mail in their ballot, or maybe a service member who's overseas serving. You know, they're not at home, but they still have a right to vote, certainly since they're defending it out in the world. A lot of states looked at it for higher turnout and participation equity, they called it. So there were studies in states like Colorado, Oregon, and Utah, which already conducted elections this way, that showed increased voter turnout, especially among younger people. It's efficient administratively. The whole system is designed, when it's designed around mail-in voting, elections offices can often streamline processes. And then, of course, there's a strong paper trail, they say, is one of the benefits as well. So really, let's talk about the cons and the reasons why we don't like mail-in ballots. Well, the elephant in the room is that it's widespread for fraud. If you don't have accurate voter rolls and you're blindly sending out mail-in ballots, you know, to voters, and you can't confirm that who you're sending them to is actually there, obviously that's going to cause an issue. Let me give you a real world example. So my uncle in 2020 passed away, not due to COVID, but unexpectedly. And for years after, my aunt still received his ballot in the mail. Of course she didn't vote because she's, you know, has integrity, but maybe she should have. I kept telling her she should have. But why is that? Well, because nobody's updating the voter rolls on an election by election basis. And so until somebody like my aunt, who's honest, goes and says, "Hey, you know, my husband has passed away, please take him off the rolls," that's not happening. That's not happening at apartment complexes where there's turnover year after year after year. People don't think, your average voter does not think to update their voter registration like some more higher efficiency or higher people who are more inclined to vote often will. So, of course, there's security concerns that are magnified with something like universal mail-in ballot, which California went to and many states went to during COVID. Critics argue that universal mail-in ballots create more opportunities for misplaced, intercepted, or coerced ballots simply because more are circulating. We saw this with documentaries like 2000 Mules, where nonprofits and NGOs were able to sort of go door to door and collect mail-in ballots.
There's a lot of manipulation there.
There's a lot of manipulation. I saw it firsthand in Orange County, where we had a Republican registrar voter that even when we went to him and said, "Hey, you need to come you know, clean up the ballots. There's, for whatever reason, there's not really an incentive to do so. You have people who are registered to vote at churches, which is not allowed in the state of California. You have to register to vote where you're domiciled. So a church does not count. A homeless shelter does not count. A dog park, which I think I've talked about on this podcast before, I saw 30 people, 30 plus people registered to vote at the Laguna Beach dog park. It's like nobody's tracking that. And so if you can't track where the person is domiciled and you can't find that person, you need to take them off the voter rolls. So one way to do that is to pressure or sue your registrar voter into going and sending out an update card, basically. I forget the official term for it, but you can send a card and basically say, hey, do you still live here? And if that person doesn't respond, then you take them off the voter rolls. That's right. That's not hurting minorities or hurting young voters' ability to vote. You have the privilege to vote in this country and in this state. And if you can't simply respond to a piece of mail that says, hey, yes, I still do live here, well, then maybe you shouldn't be voting, or you need to go and update your voter registration. One other thing real quick too that we found interesting in Orange County is one way that they would update their voter registration, or they should update their voter registration rolls, is through the jury pool. Their thinking behind that is, yeah, people who serve on a jury are civically engaged and they'll be inclined to vote, therefore. Well, when they did that, they weren't following the jury pool, because you had people who were registered to vote that had declined ability to be on a juror for one of six reasons. I don't live in this county, I'm not a citizen, I'm deceased, whatever. So you have people on the voter rolls that aren't on the juror rolls, and it's like, you know, the left hand's not talking to the right hand. It's all Orange County. So that was just stuff that we saw. Two more things: dependence on postal reliability. You know, the USPS is the DMV of postal service. I would trust FedEx with my package more than I do USPS. And possible reduction in in-person options. So some universal states reduce the number of polling places, which can disadvantage voters who prefer or need in-person voting. Look, we have lost the nostalgia around voting in this country. You know, I'm not that old. I haven't voted in that many elections compared to some people. But there's only been one or two elections where I've actually gone to the polls. And, like, you feel good on election day. Like, you're voting for who you think is going to best run your state or your country. You don't get that anymore. You fill out a ballot, you send it in the mail. And then I've said this a couple of things, but one last thing I want to mention is when you're doing the mail-in ballots, you send your ballot in, you sign it, and they're comparing your signature on your ballot to the signature that's on your driver's license. Mm-hmm. Well, my gosh, the signature that I had when I was 16, that's still on my driver's license.
Nobody's doing that.
Is not the same. So what happens is you have to sit there and you have to make sure it's the same. If you're educated, if you know that you have to do that, some people, they sign it, they think it's good. Well, guess what they're doing at the registrar of voters? People are going through and go, well, that signature doesn't match. Kank. That signature doesn't match. Get rid of that one. And so you might be losing your ability to vote, and you don't even know it. So that's my take on it.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think that COVID opened the floodgates. And states never close them. I mean, the truth is, this isn't about regular, normal individuals, right? Mail-in ballots, when I say open the floodgates, what it really did is it allowed Democrats specifically to cheat on a mass level and get away with it. Because it's very difficult to track and or prove. But the truth is, when you have these unverified signatures, ballot harvesting, no chain of custody, which is what we saw during 2020, anyone and everyone can vote. Now, what I find really interesting is once this administration took over, you saw the mass problem with, look at Social Security, for example, right? How many dead people, how many 200 something year olds were still getting checks from the government, right? The government's ability to manage things like this, ballots, they can't even do it with Social Security, is virtually zero. And the Democrats are well aware of that, especially in states like California, where you had millions of individuals who have no constitutional right to vote, mainly because they were foreigners, for example. Well, the mail-in ballot system allowed these foreigners to vote. And really, when I say vote, they didn't even know what they were voting for, right? This is controlled manipulation of voting by the left. You know, you have some examples of that, like in Michigan, there was ballot harvesting by a city official. A Michigan city councilman, Abu Musa, was captured on video handing stacks of absentee ballots to a driver who then deposited them into a drop box. This is just days before the 2025 primary. That happened all over the country. New York, misuse of absentee ballots by officials. Former Atlantic City councilman with a criminal history charged with election fraud related to absentee ballots during the 2022 general election. He paid individuals to act as fraudulent messengers and submit ballots without voter authorization.
Well, so here's the problem with what you're mentioning real quick. So in California, so that's ballot harvesting. And unfortunately in California, ballot harvesting is legal. The disadvantage for people in the Republican Party or the conservatives is conservatives hold on tightly to their ballots compared to Democrats or liberals. Now, you can't pay somebody to do that, but in the state of California, Democrats go, they'll go door to door and say, hey, let me collect your ballot. You sign the affidavit, you hand it over, it's good. The problem is conservatives don't do that. They're not willing to do that. And so that's a big disadvantage for us. But unfortunately in California, unlike other states, it is legal just to clarify.
Well, regardless, and I think that's the whole point of the argument, regardless of whether it's legal or not in a particular state, Trump is trying to change that.
Yeah, as
which,
he should.
Which we support, right? It's about transparency and accountability, because whether or not ballot harvesting is legal, the real issue is it verifiable, right? Yeah. And that's the problem, is that the ballots, whether they're harvested or mailed, are unverifiable. And whether it's electronic voting machines or mail-in or harvesting, they've gone to the nth degree to cheat when it comes to elections. And you know this, because when you say, why don't we just do voter ID, right? Very simple process.
Yeah, there's no reason
show
not
up,
to do that.
Prove that you are who you are and vote, right? Anytime anyone's like, oh no, that's racist, that's terrible, you know that they're cheating, they're hiding something.
Yeah.
Because why would any normal person, it's common sense, why would any normal person have a problem with saying, of course I would like you to vote. You're an American citizen, right? Yes, okay. Just show me your driver's license. It says, you know, or documents that show you're an American citizen, and here you vote. Well, the minute somebody in line there is like, oh my gosh, I don't want to have to prove that I'm an American citizen. Just trust me. Well, that happened times millions and millions of people across this country. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, that's why Joe Biden became president, right? The manipulation in the ballot and the voting system was through the roof. Charlie Kirk, you know, notable conservative voice, said, quote, mail-in ballots are the number one way Democrats rig election.
That and open borders.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's all working together, right? It's the Cloward-Piven strategy that we've talked about. It's dismantle the system, open the borders, and then use that group of people to illegally gain power. Jenna Ellis, another conservative voice, quote, this is about restoring the process, not just the outcome. I agree with that. Here's a Christian perspective. Voting isn't just a civic duty, it's stewardship. And we've talked a lot about this on the program and about the role of Christians in culture and society. When systems become tools of deception, which is what's happened in America, it is our God-given right to call for reform. Righteousness exalts a nation, not fraud. And that's a big deal, right? We need to stand for truth wherever we see it. Also, let's bring this into perspective here, okay? The left has always been about destroying the family, and there's a reason for that. And we've talked about Alexander Kollontai, for example, in the past. She was the first Soviet People's Commissar for Welfare. She wrote extensively about the need to separate children from their parents and the need to control people. Why? Because it's a means of power. When you exalt government to the position of God, and your whole stated belief as an ideology and goal is to eliminate God from society, which is what Democrats have openly stated, now at this time in our history, to eliminate God, to eliminate the influence of Christianity, to eliminate the influence of the church and culture, then Christians have a God-given right, and I would say blessing, to live in a constitutional republic where you can speak up for truth and you can stand for righteousness. And anybody who's telling you you shouldn't do that, you should be weary of them. That's a problem. That kind of leads us into the next section, I guess. I mean, do we have anything else on the voting thing? I mean, hopefully it passes. I think it's a great idea. The bottom line, if we could recap it before we move on, is Trump wants to get rid of mail-in ballots because it's wrought with fraud. The Democrats have used it for years now to cheat and have people who should not be voting, like you said, either dead people, people who are not citizens. If that's the only way you can win an election, then okay, you're obviously cheating and you shouldn't have this tool to manipulate. So we're all about it. And hopefully that gets reversed so that it can be just, you know, one vote cast. Like, you show up, I'm an American, I vote for the person I want. That's the end of the story. There's nothing illegal. There's nothing racist about that. It has nothing to do with the color of skin or demographic or anything like that. It just has to do with, are you an American and do you have the right to vote in your country? If you're not from here, you shouldn't have the right to vote. That's common sense, right? We have a lot of enemies out there in the world who would love to affect and degrade our society and our nation. We have a lot of global opponents. So we shouldn't make it easier for America's enemies to hurt us. The Democrats seem like they're just absolutely in love with that. But hey, what do you expect from the God haters? Let's move on to this assembly bill. I'll let you jump into that first. Intro that.
Yeah. So AB 495, man, this is a big one. The parental rights time bomb, as they're calling it. California's AB 495 expands caregiver authorization powers to non-relatives without requiring parental notification or legal vetting. Critics argue that this invites abuse, trafficking, and circumvents the God-ordained role of parents. There's as the bill stands right now, there's a lot of potential misuse or exploitation. Opponents warn that language is too broad. Anyone framed as having a mentoring relationship with the child could gain authority with little oversight, no background checks, no court oversight, no notification required for the biological parents in a state already overrun with human trafficking. I mean, this is just absolutely a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah. So recently, a lot of folks close to us made it up to Sacramento for an event up there at the Capitol steps. There was a huge turnout, right? Pastor Jack Hibbs from Calvary Chapel Chino Hills was there, and some other friends that we have from Real Impact, and many others. I find it astounding yet again, right, that the left pushes things like this with such open windows for human abuse. In this case, human trafficking. It's so obvious. It begs the question, like, how are you not aware of this? Like, did you think about this and just decide to do it anyways?
Well, here's what they do. It's the same thing with the universal mail-in ballot. How much can we get away with? Who's watching, right? The point, they say, of what AB 495 aims to do is expands who may act on behalf of a child temporarily, broadens eligibility for executing a caregiver's authorization affidavit to include non-relatives, extended family, enabling them to consent for school enrollment, non-emergency medical care if a parent is temporarily unavailable. They're saying that the author of the bill is looking at illegal immigrant families. What happens if these parents get swept up in an ICE raid and their kids at school? That's what they're saying. The problem is it's not broad enough, just like universal mail-in ballot, right? Okay, if you want to create or help people's ability to vote, and you know, you don't just open up the floodgates, you restrict it to help who you're intending to help, right? If you want to make the argument that illegal immigrant parents need somebody to act on behalf of their kids, okay, then make the bill for them. Don't make it for everybody. Yeah. What they're doing is they're seeing how much can we get away with and who's watching. Fortunately, we have people like Pastor Jack Hibbs and Real Impact that are watching these things, because otherwise a lot of this stuff happens and then it's too late. Yeah, and you don't know it's too late.
Well, and let's clear something up here at first, because I had somebody comment on my Instagram this week. I'm assuming someone, you know, left wing, who was like
a big supporter.
That's not the intention of this bill. You know, we just want to protect kids. So let's dismantle that for a second. Okay, first of all, let's go back to first principles. we do protect kids. Kids do not need protecting from legal enforcement of the law. That's a lie. And it's backed by the same people that think that we shouldn't have any borders because they live in a delusional la-la land. They think that that somehow you need to protect kids when their parents get arrested for committing criminal acts. Okay, let's put that into context. Imagine if you have a father who robs a bank, okay? And he happens to be a single dad and he's got kids at home. So he robs a bank, and in the process of robbing the bank, he shoots somebody, and now he's wanted for murder and bank robbery. We find him, we surround the house, and he gets arrested safely, right? He's getting pulled out of the house in handcuffs, and you look inside and you see some kids there. Now, we already have a process for dealing with those kids. What the Democrats are saying is ridiculous, is saying, let's pass a law that makes bank robbery legal because you're taking the dad away from his kids.
Yeah.
Okay. It's backward. It makes absolutely no sense. It is not the government's fault. It's not the police's fault. It's not the American citizen's fault that the dad is robbing a bank and shoots somebody, and that now his children have to live with the consequences of that. It's that guy's fault.
Yeah.
So passing the buck along to someone else, that's what AB 495 is about. And in doing so, in this such nonsensical, childish type laws that they write, they do expose these loopholes. Like Assemblyman Bill Asaley said this week, quote, well, he's not Assemblyman anymore. He's now, with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles. He said, quote, it is a legal loophole for child exploitation. Or Senator Shannon Grove says this bill will remove every parental safeguard possible. So in the idiocy of leftism, in their pursuit of this dream of, you know, there's nothing illegal and there's no such thing as evil, et cetera, they allow these loopholes that are gravely consequential. I mean, do you know how easy it would be if this bill passes? Just to be clear, if people aren't aware of AB 495, basically this is what could happen, okay? You are not required to prove who you are. So there's a form that you can just fill out yourself. You can show up to a school or any place, a public place where kids are without their parents, and you can say, I have permission to take this kid now to protect them. And no questions asked, that child will be given to you into your custody and you could be gone. Think about all the pedophiles and human traffickers, how much they're supporting the Democrats in this. I mean, this is a horrific and infantile bill. It's shocking.
Yeah, or even on a, people say, well, what are the odds that that happens? Okay, but what about parents that are in a custody battle and maybe the mom or the dad
exactly
doesn't have the right at this time to be in contact with the child for whatever reason, shows up at school and says, well, I'm the dad, you know, and it's like, you know, what are schools supposed to do? Schools are supposed to be some of the safest places for children, right? Like you go into school, it's locked down. You're not leaving until a parent shows up, right? I remember my mom telling me like, you know, you don't leave for anybody. It doesn't matter if it's my best friend, I am picking you up today. And if I'm not there, then you don't leave that classroom. But like, you know, it's not like that now. And I just don't understand this. Cause again, I can see if, you know, just to play the other side, okay, if you think that there's a real need for it, then why make it so broad? Limit it to those people who you think needs it. And, you know, it worries me because I don't know if people are paying attention. They fall into the, well, what's the big deal? It's not going to happen to me trap. And then, you know, there's a biblical aspect as to why, you know, this is not okay. But then how do you communicate that in a state? I mean, I was looking at a study the other day. I think the highest state, I forget which one it was, that has the most amount of adults that have a biblical worldview was like 12%. So how do you communicate this to people who don't have a biblical worldview that this is still dangerous and that as parents, you know, you should be in control of your children. You should be listening to the government.
Yeah, well, let's get into that for a second because that's the deeper discernment. Let's get to what this is really about. Both of these stories, Trump's election reform and California's AB 495, are about control, period. Control of elections, control of families. The state, the government, seeking more power over what rightly belongs to the families and to parents under God. So if you zoom out for a minute, you realize something really chilling here, that both these stories deal with one thing, control. Who controls your vote? Who controls your child? It's the same worldview culture war. Either God gives rights to people and families, or government grants permissions that it can take away. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but in America, we believe that our rights come from God, not from the government. The government's role is to protect our rights, not grant us our rights. So yeah. One of them leads to liberty, which is the American perspective. And the other perspective, which is what the Democrats push, leads to tyranny. So Karl Marx, this is what it's really all about. It's about leftism and their perspective, their incorrect worldview. Karl Marx viewed the family as a capitalist construct. This is very important to understand when you look at these bills that these far left crazies are passing. Karl Marx said the family was a capitalist construct perpetuated by private ownership and class hierarchy. So this is what these Democrats are being taught when they go to college, when they go to university. To hate their country, to hate the concept of God, to hate the core family. Alexander Kollontai, we mentioned, the first People's Commissar for Welfare in the Soviet Union, wrote, and I quote, "The family is ceasing to be necessary. Society is taking over its social educational role." Her vision was to separate children from parents, placing them into collective state-run programs. Why? Why? That's a good question. Every pastor, every Christian out there that doesn't want to talk about politics needs to think about this here. The reason is because the nuclear family resisted socialist indoctrination, which at its core was anti-God. These are the anti-theist. They hate God, they hate Christianity, and they hate the produce, the result of Christian ideology, which is the United States of America. The public education system telling children, you know, don't tell your parents, you know, nowadays. That's leftism. Gender transition procedures allowed without parental consent. That's leftism. California's AB 495 allowing non-relatives or any random stranger who signs a piece of paper to claim caregiver rights without court or background checks. That's leftism. Now, here's some biblical perspective. Okay, this is really about the family being under attack. Deuteronomy chapter 6:6-7 talks about the parents are the primary educators and moral guides. Okay, Proverbs 22, parents direct a child's path. Ephesians chapter 6, fathers are commanded to instruct and discipline their family in the Lord. Psalms 127, children are a heritage from the Lord, not the government. So this is the American founding vision. The founders believed rights came from God, not government. Strong families made a moral, self-governing people. Parental authority and limited government were foundational to the American dream and this great experiment we call America. Marxism has been at war with the family since its inception, and the Democratic Party has fully adopted that ideology, and they wage that war now on the American citizens. Karl Marx saw the family as a barrier to socialism, as we've read. Alexander Kollontai wrote extensively about removing children from parental influence to achieve their socialist goals. Today's policies mirror this. Public schools encouraging children to hide their transitions and their secret sexual clubs and from parents. It's all the same anti-theist message. Bills like AB 495 are severing parental authority. When the left wants to make government God, the family must be dismantled in order for that to happen. That's what this is about. It's not a theory, it's history. And it would do well for churches and those in leadership to understand this is a spiritual battle here. This isn't politics. This is about an ideology that is self-declared against God. Their stated goal, remove the influence of Christianity from the face of the earth. So here's a final thoughts. Defer. Do you have any last comments on that before we go into the wrap up here?
Well, I'm still trying to think, like, so how do you like communicate that to people who like are like, well, I don't really care about your biblical worldview. I'm not necessarily a leftist. So I was trying to research like trends in the nuclear family. Okay. Talk about it from a secular perspective. And it's like, well, I know just from looking at American history that it seemed to be that the economy was stronger when the nuclear family was stronger. So in 1960, 73% of U.S. children lived with two married parents in their first marriage. By 2020, that number had fallen to 46%, less than half. Poverty rates. In the U.S., children in single-parent families are 5 times more likely to live in poverty than those in a married couple families. My point is like, okay, so you don't want to hear the biblical worldview, which I think is wrong. You should.
Yeah.
But what about economics? People are wondering today, like, they're struggling to pay their bills. They can't make it. Well, you're like a single dude, not married, who's like still partying like you were in college or high school. Like, no wonder you can't make ends meet, because there's no family structure. The left is totally, like you said, very secretly, they don't come out and say it, but they've idolized the individual, and they've taken away the emphasis on the nuclear family. I mean, I'm like an anomaly to be as young as I am, to be married, own a home, have children. Like, that, very few of my peers that I went to school with have an emphasis or valued that. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, no kidding that they don't care. You know, half of these people don't care what happens to children because they don't have any children. So what do they care? People are selfish. They only care about what affects them. So you have a bunch of young Democratic voters, or even young independent or Republican voters, that are like, I'm not even going to show up to vote or care about that because it doesn't affect me.
Well, it's like what Dennis Prager said a few years ago when he said America's running on the fumes of the values of the past. And the truth is that it behooves anyone, to answer your point directly, whether you're a Christian or not, it behooves anyone to vote for these ideals, because it is where all of our liberties and freedoms that we enjoy came from. Human dignity is rooted in the concept of image of God, imago Dei. Right. Even if someone doesn't believe in God, the concept that all humans are created equal and endowed with equal rights comes from Genesis chapter 1. Genesis 1:27 says God created mankind in his own image. That laid the groundwork for the abolition of slavery, the civil rights movement, the belief in universal human rights. All of this came from the spread of Christianity throughout the world. In contrast, right, your pagan tribal societies throughout history, they had treated outsiders as subhuman. The idea that every person has equal value, regardless of race, status, or sex, is a uniquely Judeo-Christian contribution. If you want to know more about that, again, I would point to someone who says, well, I'm not a Christian. Okay, well, do you believe in history? Right?
Yeah.
Take a look at pagan societies before the spread of Christianity. Take a look at what the Aztecs and the Mayans did in their cultures here, before Christianity reached these shores. It was beyond brutal. Take a look at the Roman Empire and the gladiator games and the value of human life. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's a great book, How Christianity Changed the World. I suggest you read it. It's phenomenal. There's a lot of information. There's a huge point to argue, even for someone who says, well, I'm not a Christian. We could talk about the rule of law over man, okay? The Ten Commandments and the biblical moral law form the basis for objective justice. That's another point you could argue. Rather than justice being arbitrary or dictated by, you know, an emperor or a powerful elite, Western societies inherited this idea from the Bible that there is a higher moral law, lex rex, the law is king. Leaders themselves are accountable to that law. For example, the Magna Carta, the U.S. Constitution. These are all biblical concepts. The concept prevents tyranny and lays the foundation for liberty under law, a key to stable democracies. We could go on and on. Freedom of conscience, religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, care for the vulnerable, okay? Widows, orphans, sick, we get that from James chapter 1. Founding universal education, even for the poor. Building institutions that protect the weak from exploitation. And the family, I mean, we could go on and on and on. The leftist assault on the family is a historical and ideological reality.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of wrap it up, the correlation is strong. Statistics, again, if you want to come at it from a non-biblical worldview, you just gave a bunch of great reasons why you should come at it from a biblical worldview. But even for those people who, like a Joe Rogan, who are kind of on the fence, like, I don't know about the whole Jesus thing. Although recently on a podcast, he even admitted that if you follow the Bible, it would, you know, it's good for you. It behooves you. Even
so did Richard Dawkins, the world's premier atheist.
Yeah. You know, so the correlation is strong. Statistics, consistently show that children raised intact nuclear families, again, having that emphasis on the nuclear family, have better economic outcomes on average, higher incomes, less poverty, better upward mobility. Critics say that causation is complex, caution that it's not just family structure, it's also education, income, social supports, and community stability. Okay, well, I would argue, who has a better chance of going to college? The kid with two parents in a stable household, or the single mom trying to make ends meet and just feed her children, probably doesn't have the income to send her kids to college. Yeah. Social supports and community stability. Well, what better way to find that than going to church? I mean, talk about community. In other words, family strength and economic strength, they reinforce each other. So there's sort of the argument for that aspect of it.
Yeah. And why does it matter? Maybe you're listening, you're going, I don't like politics. I'm tired of hearing about the drama. Here's why it matters even to non-Christians. The Christian Judaic worldview has built the freest, most prosperous societies the world has ever known. I'm talking in all of human history. The erosion of those principles then, you could say, threatens freedoms for all people, not just Christians or those who believe in God. If the state replaces God and family, then no sphere of life is safe from political intrusion. You don't have to be religious to appreciate that America's greatness was rooted in moral clarity and biblical values, not moral relativism. So preserving freedom requires protecting the ideas that birthed it, including faith, family, and moral law. If you remove that Christian Judaic framework, you don't get neutrality, you get tyranny disguised as progress or progressivism. And that's what history has shown us.
If you ever see that word, you should just run.
Seriously. So just wrapping it up, final thoughts, I'd say that don't forget to pray for your country and for your nation's leaders. Act and speak boldly when given the opportunity. Don't acquiesce or, take a moral relativist perspective when it comes to politics. Politics are nothing but the struggle for power and ideas. If you're a Christian, you should speak boldly about truth. Don't cowtail to, it's okay to be a God-hating Democrat. It's not a big deal. No, it is a big deal. Ideas have consequences. Locally here, if you're in California, you can call your California representatives, push for secure elections, speak truth, always in love, but remember with urgency. So I leave you with these questions, right? What takes a greater precedence? Is it voter access or electoral integrity? Thoughts for you? And another final question, who has the final authority over a child? Should it be the government or the family? I appreciate you guys tuning in. Thanks for listening to this episode of Defining Truth. Check us out, as always, at definingtruth.org, definingtruth.org. You can pick up a copy of our book, self-titled Defining Truth. And you can get it in audio, too, on Audible, which is pretty cool. We had an awesome voice actor read that book. And remember, where truth isn't just something we believe, it's reality. It's something we fight for. We'll catch you next time.